How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is June 1st, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We've got a really good Raw to talk about tonight. We're going to do some poll questions, talk about some of the results on the front page. You can vote on yourself right now. We'll look at some of those every couple of days. And also the Rampage Rashad fallout from this weekend. Plus, we'll do some mailbag questions as well. And Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Not too bad. The Raw show, if ever there was a Raw show that kind of, I don't want to say made you happy that people were injured, but certainly you could see the silver lining in this dark cloud. It was this show, as they made a concerted effort to elevate a lot of guys all on the same show. We had the Usos, Evan Bourne, Daniel Bryan got a win on this show. A lot of guys being pushed, and it was a good thing. I don't know so much as far as building up the pay-per-view, but they've still got several weeks to do that. So overall, I gave the show a hearty thumbs up.
Yeah, it was good. Sometimes when you try to push too many guys at once, it's not a good thing because you're not. It's almost like TNA, but you know, I guess they kind of felt that they had to. I thought the Miz Daniel Bryan thing was good. But then when it was over, I kind of realized that they really should have saved it for a pay-per-view, because now the pay-per-view is the rematch, if they even do it. And if they don't do it on pay-per-view, then they did all that build-up for a two-minute television match.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was good that Daniel Bryan won. And, you know, I mean, the spot where he threw the Miz onto Michael Cole was a really cool spot. I mean, but we'll have to see where it goes. But, you know, I really think that should have been on pay-per-view. The Usos, I mean, they're trying. They're trying something new. They brought them in. At least they're not bringing them in to fail, so that's good. They were a little bit nervous on their interviews, but I mean, they still got to lay out the champions, and, you know, I mean, as far as booking-wise, they couldn't have, you know, it was booked well. And I'm trying to think what else. The Evan Bourne thing I thought was really well done. From start to finish on the show, I thought that was good. When it was his time to look good. I mean, he was on tonight. I mean, he was on in the brawl with Edge early. I mean, his timing and everything was good. And then in the main event, I mean, he didn't do any like outrageous moves, but boy, everything he did was really perfect. So, you know, he didn't choke. That's for sure.
It actually opened up with a hot open. Edge was beating up Evan Bourne. They didn't even do the show open or anything. Just came on the air. There was the beating. Evan made a comeback and went for the shooting star. Edge rolled out of the way. Evan crashed and burned. Edge speared him. They explained that before the show had gone on the air, they'd had words and tempers had flared, and this is what had occurred. And Edge grabbed a mic afterwards and said what happened to Evan was going to happen to everybody in the fatal four-way. Sheamus, Cena, Orton, all going down. And he said that as he was running them all down one by one, Orton came out, and they had a face-to-face, and Edge was basically telling the people that, I know you all think that Orton is going to attack me, but he's not, because he's hurt. And he was talking about how he was going to hurt him again at the pay-per-view and how he'd done damage at the last show and this and that. And as he's talking, Orton laid him out with an RKO on his bad shoulder, I might add, and shook it out, otherwise appeared to be fine. But then they announced...
I didn't think he appeared to be fine.
Well, I mean, I figured he had to be.
I think that was... The way he got up and went right for that shoulder, to me, that looked like that was a bad idea.
Well, I saw it as they acknowledged the injury, he did the move, he had to sell the injury if they were going to play it up, so...
I'm not talking about selling it, I'm talking about the way he went to the shoulder. I just thought that wasn't a really smart idea on a one-week-old dislocation to take a bump on the shoulder.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, it was a really stupid idea, but they did it anyway. And
I mean, you know, they're on like a photo finish. I mean, he was told over the weekend that you know, he shouldn't be wrestling for 3 weeks, which puts him like right to the day of the pay-per-view. So to me, that tells me, you know, don't take any bumps on that shoulder for 3 weeks, because, you know, if you hurt it even slightly worse and it prolongs it a week, then you're going into that pay-per-view. And, you know, I mean, he's gonna most likely wrestle on the pay-per-view, whether he's healed or not. But you know what happens when these guys, I mean, if we haven't learned anything in the last 30 years, it's when these guys come back a little bit early on an injury and start taking, you know, and then they start taking the pain pills. And, you know, the long term of that is not good.
I think literally the last thing I would have done with that injury is take a back bump. And that's what he did here. And then they announced he was going to work a tag match later, although that ended up falling through, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Ashton Kutcher was the guest host, but he never actually appeared at the show. I think they'd done a lot of pre-tapes or something like that somewhere.
I think they pre-taped in Los Angeles because the only people he was with were Eve Torres and The Miz, and both live in Los Angeles. So that was telling me that they did something like, you know, over the weekend in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, and filmed all those segments. Which the one thing I'll say is good about that is that if that's what they did, and obviously they had to do it, you know, ahead of time because both Eve Torres and The Miz were in Austin, Texas. That means that they actually, like, knew what they were doing a couple of days ahead of time.
Well,
at least on some segments.
Once you tape something like that in advance, you have to stick to it. You're stuck.
I guess you're forced at that point.
Yes, you kind of stuck in that situation. But they did it rather seamlessly. They did a pretty good job. And basically, the show-long storyline was that Ashton was upset at Zack Ryder for saying bad things on Twitter about him, which of all the people in the world, he targeted Zack Ryder, and he said that he was playing a hitman in his next movie, and so tonight he was going to put a hit out on Zack, and Miz walked up. They argued back and forth. Ashton revealed that he'd had a talk with Brett, and they'd come up with a great match for Miz for later, a match with Daniel Bryan. And Ashton said that Bryan was going to tap him out, and they argued some more. Swear words were about to be used when Eve informed them that this was a TVPG show. And TVPG is now like Impact, where they're always talking about ratings. I'm so sick of hearing about how it's TVPG. It's fine that it is, but when you bring it up every single week, it gets really annoying. And
no kidding.
And also, it's nuts.
It's that forced fake stuff.
Yes.
You know, kind of like the longest running episodic, whatever. Although they haven't actually said that in the last couple of weeks, thank God.
No.
Which means that they probably will next week.
I did love where Eve was in charge of alerting everyone that it was TVPG. And then a little later in the show, Eve was the subject of a line where Vladimir Kozlov was going to get to have sex with her if he joined up as a team with Santino Marella.
That was a pretty funny line, the way that was delivered.
Santino
was really funny now, you know, tonight. But the
distinctly not PG.
Yeah. Whatever. I wasn't a big fan of Ashton Kutcher. You know, I thought, being that he's actually a real wrestling fan, that he would do better. The other thing that was kind of interesting is they made it clear, oh God, what was it, 3 weeks ago, I'm thinking, that the guest hosts were just guest hosts and they had no power to make matches. And here we are 3 weeks later and he's out there making matches.
Well, yeah. Truth and Jericho had a really good TV match, actually, and the story of it was that they went back and forth for a while. Truth pinned him with a cradle, reversing the walls, and then they had several close-ups of Chris Jericho, who was selling it like he was suddenly having a midlife crisis. He was questioning his own career, his own future, and I guess we'll see where they go with that one, but...
Well, you read a lot into those facial expressions.
I sure did.
I was glad he did, because at least he was selling the importance of the loss, which most of these guys never do.
Well, that's why this stuck out.
I mean, it's like, the one thing I'll say with, you know, Jericho, I think he does too many jobs, but I mean, he's obviously confident in his ability, which he should be, in the sense that, you know, he can get his heat back by doing his promos. But, you know, like when he did the job to Heath Slater, I mean, there's a lot of guys on the roster and a lot of guys over the last 20 years that were big stars who would have done that job for Heath Slater and just absolutely made Heath Slater look like an absolute jerk. And Chris Jericho was not one of them. And actually, one of the reasons I think that he did this is because Chris Jericho used to be Heath Slater in WCW,
yeah,
where those guys would do jobs for him and bury him at the same time. So I think he knows the score.
Well, that's good, because some guys in that position would have done the same thing the guys did to him when he was young.
A lot of guys in his position would have done that.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, I got to say that was like a really good deal, you know, and with R-Truth, you know, I mean, R-Truth probably gained more by beating Jericho than Jericho lost by losing, because
Well, certainly, yeah.
You know, so, but I still feel he's doing too many jobs, but I guess he can get away with it.
We had the Hart Dynasty meeting with Brett, and Brett said, "I know who the guys were that jumped you last week. The Usos," he said. "I signed them to Raw." And Harry wanted to know if he knew that they were going to attack him, and Brett said he didn't know, but he wasn't going to punish them because the Harts needed some adversity. And he said, "The question is, what are you guys going to do about it?" So that was their introduction to the show officially. Santino and Eve against Maurice and Regal. This was the moment where Santino tried to recruit Kozlov by saying he could have sex with Eve if they became a team, which she denied. But apparently, Kozlov, I guess he bought it because he attacked Regal at the end of the match, allowing Santino and Eve to get the win, and then he walked to the back. So I guess they're teasing that Santino and Kozlov are, in fact, going to become a tag team. And what a tag team they shall be.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, Santino, like we said earlier, Santino was really funny tonight.
Yes.
Just the way he delivered, you know, all of his, the way all of his lines were just, they were just really well done.
Maybe this is the setup for that that pilot they shot.
Wasn't Beth Phoenix supposed to be in it? Now she's
got a problem.
Knee surgery or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Brett coming down to the ring for a very strange segment. He comes out and he's talking about how next week is a 3-hour show. And he's talked to Teddy Long. All the wrestlers are going to be there. Very special show, he said, even though we saw all the wrestlers there, I believe, last week for the...
Well, the other thing is it's so special, they had no idea of anything that's going to happen on it.
Exactly.
Other than we're getting Cyber Sunday on TV next week.
Yeah, Ted DiBiase came out and said he wanted to be the GM next week, and Brett kind of blew it off, and that's when Ashton appeared and said he had a great idea for Raw next week, which was, in fact, Cyber Sunday. So the fans are going to get to vote, choose stips, choose matches, the whole nine yards. And anyway, out came Vince McMahon, whose storyline writing out of TV or whatever the deal was lasted a whole 2 months.
Yeah.
He's already back. He talked about WrestleMania, talked about how Brett had bashed him with the chair countless times. 18, Brett said. And Vince wanted to know if he'd gotten it all out of his system. And essentially, Vince said that, "I'm here to wish you luck. It's a tough job. You have to treat the fans like children." And long story short, he said, "It's a great story that you have been banished from this show for 13 years. You came back to be the GM. And I just hope that the story of you as GM has a happy ending." And then he just became Vince McMahon, wildly strutting and being wacky. And that was the end of the segment. It was Vince being Vince. It was very weird. I don't know if it'll lead to anything or not, but there you go.
I think the deal is that they felt they had to explain why Brett was GM. So they really, I guess his explanation is he'll do the right thing or something.
The fans thought that he would do the right thing, so Vince was okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and Brett was the best guy for the job. But I think that's what it was, is that they realized like how completely stupid the storyline is of Brett being general manager after the feud with Vince, so Vince had to explain it. So maybe that was it. Although, it also could be, you know, a couple of straight weeks of what they consider bad ratings, and that usually is what brings Vince back.
Well, it's an odd day to come back on Memorial Day when the ratings going to be down anyway. It's a very non-Hogan of Vince here.
Yeah, I know, because I actually think the ratings will be down again. We'll be down lower, because usually Memorial Day is a little bit lower than, you know, just... I mean, it's not a killer. There have been Memorial Days that have been like way down, but most of the time it's only down a little. So, but I guess, you know, a little could be under a 3, and that's like where panic sets in, is when they get under a 3.
We had a stupid segment backstage. Basically, Zach wanted to know if Orton was going to attack him, and Orton said, "I would have done it by now." And anyway, he's standing there, and Edge opens and slams a door, supposedly on Orton's bad shoulder. And Orton goes down selling, and I don't know. I saw the guy do an RKO and take this giant, thunderous, flat back bump, and then Edge shuts a door on his shoulder, and now he's out of action for the rest of the show. Just, I realize you can't really hurt the guy, but it just kind of seemed a little goofy. So that was writing him off the show.
They had to do something.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, they could have just not put him in the match.
Yeah, but...
Or a phantom attack.
They could have done a Phantom Attack like TNA would have done, yeah.
Yeah. I would have preferred a Phantom Attack to this.
Who was it? Wasn't somebody like Shannon Moore, Phantom Attack Thursday?
I didn't see Thursday.
Oh, you haven't watched Impact yet?
No, I just got done with SmackDown.
Okay. Shannon Moore was Phantom Attacked, and somebody put an Ace of Spades on him, and they were wondering, like, who it was. And it's like, Orlando Jordan's been doing the wild card on people. So it's like we've got two people now in TNA that are doing card gimmicks.
Or it's Orlando.
Oh, he's using a different card.
Sure, could be.
It could be.
I would have preferred to watch Impact this week after watching that wretched SmackDown.
You know, I watched SmackDown on Friday night in Las Vegas, but we had the sound, you know, the sound was off, so I really couldn't get a good feel for it. But I don't know. I mean, I saw the Undertaker Rey match, which was exactly what, you know, every Undertaker, you know, it's like you close your eyes and envision it. That's the match they had.
Except for the broken orbital bone.
Yeah, well, I know. That part. Yeah, I know. I saw him get up. I didn't even notice he was bleeding until the end of the match, and then he got up and he had all that blood on him, and it was like, oh, I thought, it looks like he broke his nose, which in fact he did do. He broke his nose, his orbital bone, and he got a concussion, and he's out, and he may be out for the pay-per-view. And it's 50-50 from what I heard, you know, today, you know, as far as the pay-per-view goes. And I guess we'll know tomorrow based on what they do on television on how they're going to handle all that. But
so goofy, because Ray just did the springboard Sia, the sit-down splash on Undertaker, and I couldn't tell if like Ray screwed up or if Undertaker screwed up or if nobody screwed up, but he just did the move, and Undertaker caught him with his face, and Ray just sat right on his face, and I mean, Undertaker was, you know, you could tell he was hurt immediately. He immediately grabbed his eye and rolled to his side, and you know, he was supposed to sit up for a dropkick, but he just stayed on his side, and so Ray kind of did a dropkick onto his body, and Undertaker was groggy from that point forward, and it just, was just so weird. But, yeah, that was the Undertaker injury. He may not be ready for the pay-per-view, and at least they've set it up that Ray can take a spot, and kind of like they did on this show, where if Orton can't do the pay-per-view, then I guess Evan Bourne can take a spot. So
I wonder if they'll have the guts to go with Evan Bourne.
Yeah. You got three other superstars in the match.
I guess when it comes to a four-way, it probably wouldn't hurt, but at the same time, you know, I mean, they haven't even put Evan Bourne on a pay-per-view, let alone in because the Raw main event, you know, the Raw match is the main event.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I guess in the four-way, you know, the show's going to do what it's going to do, you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, it's just going to do whatever that number is. You know, I don't think that Evan Bourne being in it is going to hurt it. And actually, as a match goes, it'll probably help the match because he's, you know, a different kind of, you know, main event wrestler than those other guys, and he can pull off some new things. The I heard that it may not be Ray in the maybe it may be Kane. So,
oh God, no.
Yeah.
That Kane Punk match was insufferable on that SmackDown show.
Yeah, I couldn't really get a feel for it other than like the finish was just terrible.
Just sucked. It went on forever. Nothing happened. Nobody cared. And the finish sucked. It was like every bad thing about a match was right there in that battle.
Well, I liked Punk with a mask.
Well, it was funny, but then he had to wrestle Kane. So
yeah. Well, you know, they usually don't work well together, and they almost always botch that finish.
Well, which actually pissed me off this time, because it's like, okay, this is not a mystery that you can't do the GTS on Kane. You know what I mean?
No, it's not.
When you're putting this match together in the back, there wasn't one guy back there that went, you know, let's do a cradle or let's do something other than this stupid move that gets botched every single time. I don't know. This is WWE. These people should be professionals.
You know, plus, you know what? That move, I mean, that move kind of looks stupid on Kane anyway. I mean, even if they could do it, because he's so freaking big.
Yeah.
That it just looks stupid for a guy Punk size to be doing it, you know. He should beat him with something else.
Yeah.
You know, especially as a heel. Think about that.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if he was the babyface and Punk was the heel, it would still be stupid.
If Punk were
him as the heel doing that move on Kane as you know, for the clean finish.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
We had Bryan and The Miz. They did a lot of submission attempts by Daniel early, that sort of thing, and Miz got the heat for a while, and Daniel cut him off, put him in an omoplata crossface, which the fans actually bought as a possible submission. Miz refused to tap, tried to roll through. Daniel turned it into a crucifix. The only thing that sucked about this was it was one of those deals where this was supposed to be like, I don't want to say a flash pin, but it was supposed to be a cradle pin. And of course, the ref counts, misses shoulders and all the way down. So he stops. He waits for the shoulder to go down. Then he counts three. Miz kind of looked like a geek. It kind of killed the momentum there at the finish. But there was a big win for Daniel Bryan over the Miz in about 3 minutes. And Miz jumped him afterwards, was beaten on him, and then Daniel did a switch and sent him over the announcer's table and on Nicole. And fans loved that. And aside from the brevity of it, I mean, it was pretty good stuff. It would have been better if it were longer, if they had some time. I did
and
think
on pay, and on paper. I mean, to me, that angle that they did last Tuesday was great. And you know, they don't do many angles that good in the course of a year, like maybe five all year, you know what I mean? Mm. And to waste that and put it on TV with no, you know, with 20-minute build up or whatever, and then give them, you know, 2 minutes and what, let me look at this thing. It was 2 minutes and where is this? 2 minutes and 6 seconds. I was just appalled.
Yeah.
You know, having said that, it was a really good segment, but, you know, you can give away your pay-per-view main events and do really good segments on TV. That doesn't make it any less stupid.
And they did, the way they did the deal at the end, I mean, it's pretty clear this is going to continue in some way. And
yeah.
The one thing also that was patently obvious from this, they did get into the Uma Plata and the finish and the going over the announce table, but it was pretty clear that Jerry Lawler and a lot of the crowd do not watch any NXT.
Well, we know Jerry Lawler doesn't.
My God, Jerry Lawler had no idea what was going on. Cole's bringing up that Daniel's a vegan, and Lawler's like, what? Thinking, okay, well...
Well, he knew what a vegan was. He just didn't understand why that was any big deal.
Well, I mean, it's been mentioned many times on NXT that Bryan's a vegan, and Lawler just had absolutely no idea.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then it's you know...
Yeah.
To me... Of all the things, you know, to try to, like, make some point, I don't know if that's one of them.
He's a loser because he doesn't eat meat. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like, you know, the not having a TV I thought was okay because that kind of makes you kind of a weirdo. But the, you know, not eating meat is, I mean, I know a lot of people don't eat meat.
Sure.
It's not that big of a, it's not like some, like, thing that you bring up to, like, say a guy's a loser for.
Well, vegan is a little more strict than just not eating meat.
Yeah, but so what? So he's on a strict diet. He's a professional athlete.
That's true. That's true.
You know? If, you know, Mac Danzig, who also is a vegan.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, that like, if you were building up a match with Mac Danzig, okay, let's say you're going to fight him. Would you go, I'm going to insult this guy by calling him a vegan? You wouldn't. You would go like, well, that's a lame thing. I'm going to insult him for the fact that he does crummy promos or that he's a weirdo.
Sure.
But it's like, he's a vegan, you know, or that he loves bugs, you know, but...
That's a weird one, too.
Well, there's a lot of good things to insult about Mac Danzig. But
Cole
being a vegan
just,
isn't one of them.
Cole should have come up with... He should have claimed that Daniel Bryan drank his own urine.
Well, but that would be a good one.
That would be a good one.
Yeah.
We had, and I'm not saying he does, everybody. I'm just saying that's some MMA fighters do, in fact, drink their own urine, and that is strange.
Well, Luke Kumo and Lyoto Machida.
Yeah. We had the...
One of whom I don't even know what ever happened to him.
Well, don't drink your urine, everybody. You'll be a statistic, perhaps.
Machida had a good run.
Yeah.
And he may be on top again soon. He's a pretty talented guy.
We had the Usos coming out and doing a promo. I noticed that one of them is named Jay, which I can't tell if either A, that does not bode well for JTG, or B, by next week they'll figure it out and he'll have a new name. So I think it's one or the other. And hearts came down. There was a brawl. The Usos got the better of it. They all did the Superfly Splash. Nobody fell off the top this week, although Jay did jump about 5 seconds earlier than the other two, it seemed. And
yeah.
What can you do? These guys need to get on the road and work. Real teams for a while.
Yeah. They tried to do a promo, and, you know, on their promo, they acknowledged that they were from the Wild Samoan lineage, and Tamina said, you know, she was the daughter of Jimmy Snuka, and, you know, I didn't really think the promo did much for me at all. I mean, they were trying. She's, you know, it just didn't, it was okay.
It's kind of funny because they didn't seem to care at all about her until she mentioned she was Jimmy Snuka's daughter, and then they cared slightly more.
Yeah.
But not much.
Then, and then they come back, and Jerry Lawler goes, those are the twin sons of Rikishi. Which they've never bothered to mention that once.
No.
Themselves.
No.
He had to, like, give them, you know, he had to explain who they were. So
Zach came out for the weekly really stupid segment that at least is not usually all that long and is the only one on the show. It was him asking Ashton to tell us who was going to attack him. And so first Lawler got in the ring with a chair, but then he sat in the chair. And Ashton said, it's not Lawler. And then Kali came out, but it wasn't him. And then Goldust came out, and it wasn't him. And Zach was freaking out, wondering who it was going to be. And he ended up dropping the mic, and as he reached down to pick it up, Alicia Fox gave him her horrendous axe kick, I might add. And then she did a little dance, and she left. And that was the hit on Zack Ryder, and that was the end of the segment. It was lame.
Oh, was that a waste of time?
Yes. And I guess probably she'll just...
You build up the whole show to some woman who can't do an axe kick.
And she'll be back, I'm sure, with him next week.
I don't think she will. I think that's the breakup.
Wow, what an angle this has been then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were together for all of 2 weeks and...
Well, I mean, last week in the stupid segment, you know, Virgil was killed by the Cobra death grip, and he was back this week.
Yeah, well, they have to wait for Ted DiBiase to get healthy to get rid of him.
That's true.
Yeah.
Sheamus... had a meeting with Edge. They agreed to take out Orton. Or, I'm sorry, Cena. They'd already taken out Orton. So, Cena comes out for the main event and announces that due to Edge's actions, Orton was unable to compete. And they hadn't given him much time to find a partner. But luckily for him, everybody hated Sheamus and Edge. And so he'd found a human wrecking ball high flyer who was going to be his partner tonight. Ended up being Evan Bourne. They had a hell of a main event. Mostly Evan just selling, like, a fantastic babyface in peril, making little comebacks here and there. And Cena, I don't want to say he was the star of the match because I would be taking away from Evan Bourne, who was also great, but John Cena on the apron playing cheerleader in this match was a phenomena. He was fantastic. And he had the crowd going nuts. And, of course, Evan made the tag. Cena ran wild. They did a four-way. Cena gave Sheamus the FU and then sent Edge into the post, and Evan hit the shooting star press, second of three on the show, I might add, and got the pin. Place went crazy. Cena just treated, you know, young Evan Bourne like he was at his level, and it was actually a real great deal, this main event here. So a big thumbs up, and as noted, it does leave the possibility is there that if Orton can't compete, Evan can take a spot based on this finish here. Or next week, he may just be relegated to the prelims again. Who knows? But this week,
he may get destroyed by Sheamus next week.
That could be, yeah. I mean, in fact, that will probably happen.
If you look at all of Evan Bourne's big wins, the next week, the guy goes and beats him back.
That's true. Well, that's depressing. So that's Raw, everybody. Good show overall. And, as far as news, before we get into the questions here today, what's the fallout from Rampage and Rashad? What kind of business numbers have we got?
Well, I mean, it's Memorial Day, so I don't have much, but it did pretty big. All indications are pretty damn big, you know. So what that actually is, I don't know, but. Some places real, real big. The I asked people on the website, you know, if they went to sports bars, and I would say 80% said that it was as packed as it's ever been.
Yeah, we had people talking about how not only was it packed, but there were 50 people outside looking in the windows to watch it on the TV.
A lot of places. This isn't just like one place. A lot of places were like that. There were very few people who wrote me where they didn't say the place was completely packed and there wasn't a line out the door. So it was a great night if you owned a sports bar. I can tell you that. And they should be they should be thanking Dana for that. I didn't hear how the closed circuit it did in the other locations in Vegas. I would think that as far as the Yahoo, how many people clicked onto the story, it was probably it was a level as big as any of the biggest fights in history except for Lesnar and Mir. So, you know, I don't know, 850 to a million. You know, who knows? Maybe a little lower. Probably no higher than a million. I don't think because they've only hit a million, I think, three times.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe this is pretty close to it. You know, I think it's going to be top five of all time, though. So it's tie in top five would be 920 would be number five. So, right, number one, two, three. Yep, 920 would be number five. So, I think it may be in that range. This is about where we were kind of predicting going in anyway.
We got some polls up on the front page. We were going to talk about some of these. First one here: if Fedor beats Fabricio Werdum, can Fedor versus Overeem do 150,000 buys on pay-per-view? And the results as of midnight tonight: 108 vote no. That's 46.8%. 36.4% say yes, and then 16.9% say it depends on the undercard. And
what do you think? I it's too early to tell because you know it all depends on the last week of build-up. So
I don't feel 150.
I think if it's done well, it can. I mean, I don't see any reason why not. The WEC show did that.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, WEC show had a great job of last week build-up, though.
Yeah, well, it is way early, but my initial guess would, I think they could do 75 to 100.
Oh, they'll beat 100 for sure, because Affliction did 100 with no TV.
Well, that's true.
And Fedor and Overeem, I think that Overeem, in people's eyes, just because of how he looks, people are going to think that he's more of a threat to Fedor than, you know, the guys he's fought so far, you know, than Tim Sylvia and Andre Arlovsky. Even though Andre Arlovsky did have some UFC fame, but, you know, Andre Arlovsky was tailor-made to get knocked out by Fedor. Overeem, you know, at least Overeem, I think, has a fighting chance of winning that fight. I didn't think Andre Arlovsky had a prayer.
And I just think with like all of the promotion for that WEC show on all those UFC pay-per-views and on Spike, and they got a lot of promotion for a really big fight, and they did 150. I just don't see Strikeforce doing nearly that much promotion. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
What if they have Gina Carano and Herschel Walker on the undercard?
Depends on who they fight, I think.
Herschel Walker, though, Herschel Walker got tremendous press for his first fight.
Sure.
So, you know.
But I mean, if it's Herschel Walker versus your average geek, I don't picture that. I picture that leading to a lot of people watching it for free, but
yeah.
I don't picture
that. I agree that Herschel Walker would be better for free than on pay-per-view as far as, like, you know, making a big difference. But as far as getting publicity for the show, you know, you get, you know, he can get publicity for the show, especially if it's during football season.
And I think you'd have to have Gina versus Cyborg in a rematch for people to really care.
That would be huge. And then but the problem is that I don't see them making that fight because, you know, it's not going to be any different than the first one.
Yeah.
In fact, I actually think it would be worse than the first one because I think that Cyborg would have more confidence, and Gina's coming off. Think about this: Gina would be coming off a movie, so that's only going to make her worse.
Second poll: who do you expect to win NXT? We've got Wade Barrett at 59.1%, David Otunga 30.2%, Justin Gabriel at 10.7%. I don't know, actually.
Everyone expects Wade Barrett, and the only reason he wouldn't win is because they're trying to would be for a swerve.
See, I mean Wade Barrett, if the wrestlers are really voting, And it's based on that, then Wade Barrett wins. If WWE is trying to...
Well, the WWE is going to do it based on, you know, it's just a question of, do they want to, you know, to me, it's like so obvious Wade Barrett's going to win, and that worries me. If it wasn't obvious, I think he would have a great chance of winning. But when everyone in the world thinks he's going to win, I just picture them in that room going like, well, he can't win.
Well, it's different here because we've seen him ranked number one every week, so people should expect him to win. It's not like
that's the problem. That's the problem because they've ranked him number one every week. I think that they're, you know, there's too much of a chance of a useless swerve in this one.
I'm just afraid that they're going to want Otunga over, and so they'll give him the win.
He'll flop though.
Well, yes, of course.
People, you know, the problem with Otunga is that in the last month or so, I'd say the last 3 weeks, I really have noticed that people have started to see through him. At the beginning, I don't think they did, but now, you know, and I think, you know what I think is the reason? Is because the freaking wrestlers told everyone, you know, and then once they tell you, you know, oh, this guy can't wrestle at all. He can't run the ropes. He's like a deer in the headlights. And all of a sudden, I think that at that point, people start going like, you know, he can't wrestle. He can't run the ropes.
Well, he can't.
Yeah, I know.
I do. If I'm going to make a dark horse prediction, if they're going to do a swerve, I will predict Justin Gabriel just so that they can put him and Matt Hardy together as a team and do a tag match on the pay-per-view and get the stipulation over with.
Yeah.
It's a fatal four-way. Who cares? You got Justin Gabriel in there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Seven other guys.
And
there,
he can work. He's not bad at all in the ring.
No. Just I was shocked to hear he'd been around for a decade.
I think 13 years.
Oh, my God.
I think he's been around 13 years.
I think for 13 years, he should probably be better, but...
Yeah, but a lot of that was working. I mean, like, you know, it was all working overseas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a different world. And I mean, it's like he probably is better. He's probably, you know, better at his own style. Unfortunately, you know, he's trying to learn our style.
And finally, we've got which of these matches is most appealing to you. 33.5% have picked Jackson versus Griffin.
Interesting.
33% Jackson versus Machida. So it's almost a tie.
Yeah.
Jackson versus Nogueira, 10.6%. And I'd presume that's Little Nogue.
Yeah.
Griffin and Machida, 9.3%. Nogueira versus Brills, 8.8%. And Griffin versus Nogueira, 4.8%. It's interesting watching the weigh-ins. I was actually thinking, when Little Nogue came out, I kind of thought, you know, I wonder if like a decent portion of this crowd actually thinks that he's his brother.
Well, it'd be difficult because his brother was standing right next to him.
Well, he was, but when he first came out, they just saw him on the screen and everybody cheered, and he looks identical. And it was like, yeah. I wonder if these people realize that this is the little brother here. And yes, then his big brother.
I think they know.
Yeah. All right, let's let's get into the mailbag here. We've got a million questions, so let's do some of these before we wrap it up here today. This person says, the other night, Dave mentioned that TNA really needed a developmental system. Do you think they could strike up a deal with Team 3D to develop their school into one? Well, they kind of...
It's not so much the school. It's the fact that you need a place to for these guys to be working, you know, three, four nights a week, you know, in front of crowds. I mean, Team 3D, my impression from watching, and I guess it's from watching Jesse Neal. Well, you know what, though? They also trained Rob Terry, so I don't know what to say.
And Rosie Lottelove.
Yeah, but I haven't seen her yet. I only know that she killed poor Daphne.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Personally.
But then they signed her.
They did. You know, the thing, I don't know if a lot of people realize this about Ohio Valley when they had their developmental system was, they had a loop where there were weeks where they would have the guys working five house shows in these little towns all around Kentucky and in the surrounding areas. These guys worked a lot of shows. It's very different working matches in the wrestling school in front of your friends and the trainers and that sort of thing, and actually being out there in front of people several nights a week. That's what you need when we say a developmental territory. It's more than just a place where you can go to wrestling school and do a bunch of matches with the guy in charge. You've got to get out there in front of people, work matches with different people, have guys come down that are a lot better than you and do matches with you. That's how you get better. And that's what they're missing. That's what WWE is missing too, because there's no Florida loop really. There were those.
They run a few shows, but they don't run that many.
No.
And the other thing is that those guys in FCW, they really do only work with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like that. There's like big stars coming in to work with them. I mean, on occasion there is, but it's very rare.
There's a reason that when guys get called up, the guys that get called up and actually make it, they get called up and sometimes they're very green, but you put them on the WWE house show tour where they're doing four shows a week and a TV, and the good ones improve exponentially very, very fast. Like Brock Lesnar, actually, when he came up, he was pretty green, but they put him on the road, and 4 or 5 months later, that guy was getting really good. And, you know, that's what you need. You need to get out there and have a lot of wrestling matches to become a good wrestler. And developmental right now is not providing that to these people.
Yeah.
This person says, growing up in rural Manitoba, the only product we got was WWF Superstars. Lately, I've been hearing Jim Cornette talk about Mid-South. The only Mid-South I ever saw was in the After Mags. As a new fan of this territory, can you recommend specific angles or datelines of shows I should go out of my way to see?
Anything, really. You know, I think pretty much most of the TV that they did in 84 was really, I think they had a really strong year, and they had a great business year in 84. So that would probably be some of the best. 85 was good. But they had good TV for the most part constantly. In fact, I would say during that era, Mid-South probably had the best TV. Some people, Memphis sometimes did, but I think Mid-South had more cliffhangers at the end of the show, which nobody does anymore, that were really good, that made you, you know, like when the show was over, they did a really good job of making you can't wait for the next show. And it worked because Mid-South Wrestling, you know, from a rating standpoint, was the strongest wrestling TV show of its era. When they went on TBS, I mean, they went on TBS in a bad time slot, and they did 5.3 average over 13 weeks before, you know, they lost the time slot. And that was, you know, WWE was doing maybe 3.9s, you know, for their best shows, and nobody else was doing anything close to that. I mean, so, you know, I think you just, the thing with it, Mid-South, it isn't like a self-contained hour like a lot of the TVs. It's like you kind of have to, you know, watch week in and week out, and really, that's how you really would get the full feel of Mid-South Wrestling. But I thought their TV was tremendous television for its time.
Person wants to know, why was King Kong Bundy essentially gone from mainstream wrestling between his 80s and 90s WWF stints?
He pretty much retired, I think. He was doing something else, you know, so that's basically what it was. And then he came back, and then he had a short run, and then he does very, you know, did very few indies. I don't think he's not doing any indies now. I know he's doing, he may be doing some promoting, and I don't know if he's doing stand-up comedy anymore. I know he tried that for a while. I haven't heard his name, so I don't think he's doing that anymore.
It's an interesting one. Do you think three judges are enough in an MMA fight in an octagon or a cage? Given the shape and size of the area, are judges able to see enough of the action if it's on the other side to be able to accurately judge the action? When the action is on the ground and up against the cage, I'd imagine it might be difficult to see exactly what is going on. Not suggesting we need eight for each side. I presume he means eight per cage. Eight per each side would be 64, which is a little excessive. Maybe five might be the answer.
I'm not against the idea. I think three comes from boxing. Just like everything that they do is freaking comes from boxing, as opposed to like coming up with something that's more conducive to the sport. So five judges is probably better than three. But they have three because boxing has three. It's going to be it is so hard to get anything changed. Even if it's like for the good, it's just so hard. And that's why, you know, like it's, you know, things just are going to stay the way they are. I mean, it's so hard to get rule changes. I mean, even things that are like logical, like to me, in every state in this country that has that, you know, they should drug test. And if you fail a drug test, you should forfeit your match. I mean, that, to me, that's just like logic. And there's places where that just doesn't occur. And there's places where there's places where the referees are not allowed to use instant replay to overturn decision. It's ludicrous. This is like a real sport. It's not like freaking professional wrestling, you know, where, oh, you know, you need that stupid gimmick to like, you know, let heels win, you know, have an excuse for heels to win.
This person says there was a special called The Mania of WrestleMania that aired on UPN before WrestleMania 20. Was this always intended as a UPN special or something bigger?
I think they wanted to do...
I think it was supposed to be a DVD.
Well, it was a DVD. They did release it as far as a DVD.
Yeah.
But I think that they wanted it to be like a feature film. And somehow it ended up as a TV special. It was interesting. It was actually pretty good. As I recall, I thought it was really good.
And he says, and that's special.
They picked a hell of a mania because Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, you know, and Steve Austin nearly dies the day before. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, his blood pressure was through the roof. Lesnar kills himself on a Shooting Star Press and is just completely, was like this, you know, wild bear in the you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, backstage is going crazy. And then you had Angle doing like this four-star match when he absolutely had no business wrestling, and he had this incredible match. And you know, after the show, he was, you know, a complete basket case. So it was actually a terrifying thing when you saw it, because it was kind of like the lengths that these guys go.
Maybe that's why they wanted to keep it out of theaters. These guys are insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the idea when they first did it and how it turned out were probably two different things, because I don't know if they, you know, expected all that happened, you know, all that went down to happen.
And he also wanted to know the story behind the Steve Austin deal.
He just kept drinking energy drinks and, you know, just, I think he just had a panic attack because he was hurt so bad. And all of a sudden, you know, he's faced with this idea that he had to do a WrestleMania match, which is, you know, pretty high stakes. And I think
and his last one.
Out. What?
And his last one.
It ended up being his last one, yeah. Yeah, he never wrestled again after that match. Although they tried to get him to lose to Coachman.
That's right, yeah. And finally, this person says, surprised to see Mike Whitehead making a corner at the UFC this weekend. Last I heard, he'd been put in jail for sexual assault and drug charges. Is there an update on the situation? Have charges been dropped? Is he out on bail with the trial pending? The commentary team...
Well, he's obviously out on bail.
Yeah. Commentary team didn't mention anything and made it seem completely natural that Whitehead would be there. So,
yeah,
no update.
I haven't seen the commentary on that show, but to be honest, I don't remember him being there. You know, you usually don't remember, you know, notice the corner men that much at the show, at least live. I sort of do, but I mean, I don't know. It's like you know, they all look the same, you know, because like either like Greg Jackson or Bob Cook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Same guys over and over again.
Well, that's going to do it for today, everybody. But we're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. Do we have any guests lined up for that day, or is it TBA?
TBA.
TBA. So we'll have something for you on Wednesday. Tomorrow, we'll be joined by Lizzie Valentine, talking about a lot of things, including Wrestlicious, believe it or not. That's going to be on tomorrow's show. New Brian and Vinny show tomorrow night. Landstorm is on Thursday. We got some other stuff coming up as well. Plus new newsletters, new Figure Four out tonight, new Observer out tomorrow, and a new back issue just went up yesterday as well. And make sure you check out WrestlingObserverShoots.com. We'll talk about that more tomorrow night. But ordering information up about the Abdullah the Butcher Shoot DVD. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow night as noted. So lots of stuff coming up. Check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.